From DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Many of you are probably like me. You have friends who are not Georgia fans. And, you know, for me, a lot of this interaction comes on SEC Country Live in the afternoons. We talked about that a little bit last week, about what the Georgia haters are saying these days. But the folks that you know in your life, the folks that you interact with online that are not Georgia fans, the one thing they're going to say over and over again about Georgia for this upcoming season is, listen, Georgia's got too much to replace. Georgia has lost way too much off its 2017 team to kind of come back and do anything significant in 2018. Yeah, Georgia fans, they're happy about winning the SEC, and yeah, Georgia fans can say they finally made the college football playoff, but that's sort of a one-year story, at least the Georgia haters would have you believe, because of the fact that Nick Chubb's not here anymore and Sony Michel's not here anymore, and kind of on and on down the list you could go of significant contributors in the 2017 team who are getting ready to move on to the NFL or sort of move on to their next stage of life. It is important to note here, though, while a lot of the sort of naysayers about Georgia football may say that, the people who are forced to put their money where their mouth is apparently don't quite feel that same way. I thought that Brett McMurphy, the longtime college football reporter, had a very interesting tweet. Going to the Las Vegas Superbook, and I believe this is the sports book at the Westgate Hotel. The Las Vegas Superbook has updated their college football playoff national championship odds here. And what you see is that Georgia is among the very highest favorites to win the championship here in 2018. Alabama is listed at 7-4, which is a little less than 2-1. Clemson's at 5-1. Clemson brings a bunch back from its defense. That's why you see Clemson so high on that list. And then Georgia comes in at 7-1. Ahead of teams like Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State, Oklahoma, Washington, well ahead of all those teams, but even ahead of a team like Ohio State that's been sort of a multiple, a time appearer in the college football playoff. So Georgia at 7-1 to win the national championship, that would seem to fly in the face of some of the naysayers out there who say that Georgia's destined to kind of come back to earth, too much to replace on defense. Chubb and Michelle gave Georgia too much on offense, and it's just not going to happen for the Dogs here in 2018. Well, Las Vegas apparently doesn't quite feel that way. And you can say, well, all of those odds are just simply based on the fact that Georgia was in the playoff a year before. Look at all those playoff teams from a year before, kind of ranked highly on this list. And the thing to remember about that is, you know, when you go back to the playoff a year ago, I mean, Georgia got by far the least attention of the other three teams in the college football playoff. People are paying attention to Oklahoma because they had the Heisman Trophy winner, Baker Mayfield, paying attention to Clemson because it was the reigning national champion, paying attention to Alabama because it had been in every college football playoff. Nick Saban, obviously the most high-profile coach. Georgia was the party crasher to the playoff a year ago. So to think that its national championship odds this season are based solely on the fact that it was in the playoff a season ago, you know, that kind of flies in the face of the media attention that Georgia got in the last postseason, which was far less than the other three teams that were in there. I mean, I'm not telling you that being 7-1 to win the national championship means that's what Georgia's going to do in 2018. There are obviously some arguments to make for why it wouldn't, but I do think there is some significance to the fact that Las Vegas, once again, when they are wrong, they lose money. Las Vegas is listing Georgia among the favorites right now, even if you don't plan on getting a bet down on the Dogs. I think if you're a UGA fan, you do take this as, at least to a certain extent, some good news. Although it is worth pointing out here, while Las Vegas may be very high on Georgia, right now Kirby Smart is not necessarily high on every aspect of his program, every aspect of his team. When he spoke to the media after the first spring scrimmage on Saturday, Kirby Smart was pretty emphatic about two major concerns he sees right now for UGA. Here is what Kirby Smart says, sounding very little like a coach who's expecting to win a national championship by the end of this season. Here is Kirby.
The biggest concern is the defensive front and the secondary. I continue to say that. And it's mainly because we don't have the depth that we need. We have some good frontline players. We don't have the guys that when a guy goes down for a game, what are you going to do? What's your answer? And that's what coaching's for. That's what we're trying to find. What's our best personnel? We had some similar issues last year with Malcolm's foot, some injuries, and we had to play Lorenzo more. So, you know, we're looking at different packages and the best way to use our personnel.
Yeah, so listen, I mean, you hear Kirby Smart there. As I said, you know, the folks around the national media, or at least in the folks that are interested in what happens in Las Vegas, they may be talking about national championships for Georgia and the chances of Georgia repeating back in the college football playoff. But Kirby Smart is more laser-focused in on two pretty significant concerns. He talks about the secondary there. He talks about that defensive line. Those are two issues that Kirby Smart wants to deal with. And obviously, when it comes to the defensive line, I think we'll probably get into that subject a little bit more later on in the week here on Dog Nation Daily. I do want to deal with the secondary here for a moment, though, because Kirby Smart went into more detail about, you know, what he sees from that group right now in terms of being as good as Georgia was a year ago, good enough to repeat as SEC champions, good enough to be back in the college football playoff, make the Las Vegas Superbook, make the national championship odds look like they were a smart bet here during this offseason. Well, Kirby says that group's got some miles to travel if it wants to be ready to do just that. Here is Kirby on the secondary.
Yeah, we're a long way away in secondary. As you know, there was a kind of a unique unit of DBs that had played for a long time around here. They had taken a lot of experience. So with them gone, we have been anticipating this void for, you know, 2 years now. And we've tried to get some guys in here, not only just signing in last year, that can fill that void. But we're not where we need to be. We don't have the depth we need, and we're not playing at the level we need to play. Now, I think they're going against two pretty good quarterbacks, and I think they're going against a good wide receiver unit. But we've got to play at a higher level in our conference, because our conference, to me, is full of experienced quarterbacks.
Quick aside here for a moment. We'll get back to the secondary conversation. Did you notice, though, what Kirby says about the quarterbacks there? He says they're going against two pretty good quarterbacks in practice. You know, most of us haven't had a chance to see too much of Justin Fields yet. Even the media that's in Athens every day only gets to see a little bit of those practices. But Kirby Smart right there, maybe a little bit of a slip in letting us know that it's not just Jake Fromm who's performing well during practice. It's Justin Fields as well. And he also alluded to some more of those comments. We played some of that for you yesterday on Dog Nation Daily. But it sounds like, indeed, that number two offense for Georgia, led by Justin Fields right now, is sort of getting the job done. Kirby Smart kind of dropping that into that comment there. I think he's also right when he says about the quarterback situation in the SEC in general at the moment. This is a league that I think kind of wants to pass the ball a little more here in 2018 than it probably did in 2017 and really has in recent years in the SEC. Just take one team here for a moment that Georgia will play this season. Look at LSU. Long dominated by that power running game. Well, Darius Geis isn't there anymore. And Leonard Fournette's been gone now for a while. The transition to Steve Ensminger, the new offensive coordinator. Ed Orgeron says he wants to be 50-50 run to pass. That's a team that Georgia plays on the road in October, which is going to put more pressure on the secondary team that wants to throw the ball more. South Carolina has talked about wanting to have an up-tempo offense. That's Georgia's first big game, second week of the season. Even Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee, with Tyson Helton calling some of the plays there, they're talking about wanting to be a little bit more dynamic with the passing game. So a lot of the Georgia opponents here for 2018 will, I think, at least attempt to put pressure on the UGA secondary, so it's probably a good thing that Kirby Smart's talking about that right now during the spring. And then to sort of drill down a little bit more on the issues with the defensive backs, we obviously know that in Kirby's first really big haul as a recruiter, the 2017 class, which was ranked number 3 overall by the 24/7 Sports Composite Team Ranking, there were a lot of defensive backs in that class. But for the most part, we haven't really heard from any of those guys, either on the field or even during practice. Richard LeCount has the look of a future star, but the only other guy from that group who right now seems close to playing is a converted defensive back, Mark Webb, who entered the class as a wide receiver. What about guys like Latavius Breeny and Amir Speed and Eric Stokes and Trey Bishop? Where are they in the storyline of maybe getting ready on the field and getting ready to do something for Georgia? Well, Kirby's been candid about that all spring, including on Saturday. Here is more of him on that subject.
They have the size and length requirements. Stokes certainly has the speed requirements based on his 100 meters, but some of those guys at those positions, I don't think they're challenging themselves mentally to learn the playbook, and it's their time, and they've got to step up or they'll be replaced by the people coming in, because we've got to take guys that have instincts. Instincts mean when the guy moves and goes outside, they got to move outside with him. They can't be slow to react. And right now, we're not playing real well at those positions. And those are guys that I would understand it if they were down on the scout team last year and they didn't get reps. But because of our depth issues, most of those guys were our backups that didn't have to play last year, but they took reps. And we're just not where we need to be at that position.
I mean, candidly, this is why you recruit a lot of players at every position, because not everybody is going to pan out. And it's way too early to write off any of the names that Kirby Smart just mentioned there. But it is also true that summer arrivals for the class of 2018 are at defensive back, capable of pushing these guys. And in some cases, some guy may get pushed out of that opportunity for playing time, really even an opportunity for a significant practice reps. That's the nature of the beast when you're dealing with a program that's trying to be as talented at every single position as Georgia's trying to be. But to sort of wrap up this topic, let me try to tie the two things together. You know, when you hear Kirby Smart talk about the defensive secondary, or when we get into the issues that Kirby addressed when it comes to the defensive line, it can sort of sound like Georgia's very far away from being the kind of team that can pay off on those Las Vegas Superbook odds of 7-1 to win the national championship. But it's important to remember here that Georgia's problems aren't really all that different than anybody else in college football. Everybody's got issues right now. Alabama's got things it's trying to deal with. Clemson, Oklahoma, the two teams that were also in the college football playoff a year ago, they've got issues they're trying to deal with as well. I think the important thing to remember here is that while in the springtime you've got a lot of folks trying to work through problems and find some strengths and sort of establish a baseline for performance of the season, there is a thought among many, including the betting public in Las Vegas, that eventually Georgia will get those kinds of things figured out. And we're talking about the college football playoff maybe by the end of the season. There is at least some thought from some that Georgia expects to be very much a part of that conversation. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We are presented by Marco's Pizza, and we are glad you're with us today. Whether you check us out on a video, 10 a.m., the Dog Nation Facebook and YouTube pages. You can listen to us on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, in podcast form, Apple Podcasts, the Android devices. We post the show at theworldfamousdognation.com. We are glad you are with us today. We'll have Jeff Sintel here coming up in just a moment. Before that, as I said, let me remind you that we are presented to you by Marco's Pizza today, and you know that right now Marco's got a great offer for you. They want you to meet the boss of all cheese pizzas. This thing is amazing. It's like five cheeses together. An extra large right now is just $10.99. They call it the Big Cheese, and they call it the Big Cheese for a reason, because it is huge and is a great deal and a really great tasting pizza. Authentic Italian pizza, that's what they call it there at Marco's Pizza, and my family loves it. Your family will too, so check out the Big Cheese for just $10.99 for an extra large at the Marco's closest to you. As I said, we will get Jeff Sintel here coming up in just a couple of moments. Our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all with Jeff today. One of the serious subjects we'll get into with Jeff right here off the top. Now, we'll do some fun stuff and some happy stuff in terms of the G-Day visitor list that's sort of growing here and getting better as we get closer and closer to April 21st, but kind of a significant storyline developing here with Georgia and five-star linebacker Owen Popoe. Let me go back in time here a little bit to a few weeks ago when one of our buddies here on Dog Nation Daily, one of our colleagues at SECCountry.com, he covers Auburn recruiting. His name is Benjamin Wolk, and Ben at the time was reporting about a recent visit that five-star linebacker Owen Popoe had taken to Auburn, and it sounds like while Popoe was on campus there at the Plains, Auburn made a pretty significant pitch to him. Here is how Ben Wolk described that on our program.
He did visit Auburn February 3rd for their junior day. And that was, when he left that was when he was saying that he needs to rearrange his top three because Auburn needs to be in there. And I've spoken with him subsequently, and he said, yeah, Auburn's really up there in that number two spot. I mean, Georgia's still clearly his number one school. But what they preached to him was, one, Kevin Steele and Travis Williams like all their linebackers to know all three of their linebacker spots. I mean, you see it. They run so many two and three different linebacker sets that they like all three of their guys. I mean, they have three starters right now, really, Montavious Atkinson, or last year, Montavious Atkinson, Trey Williams, Deshaun Davis, and then really Darrell Williams as well, who will fill in that Trey Williams role this year. And all three of them did, you know, all three different things at linebacker. The one thing that Travis Williams and Kevin Steele preached to Owen Popoe at junior day was that they want to see more film of him at inside backer, sort of doing that Roquan Smith type of role.
So now a little bit more from Benjamin Wolk here, going into some more detail about not just the pitch from Auburn to Popoe here, but the fact that he really felt like even back then it was going to come down to Auburn versus Georgia for Popoe's services. Here's a little bit more from Ben Wolk.
I think the world of Owen as a player and just as a person and a recruit, I know that Auburn does as well, and that's why they've made a serious push over the last month. I'm actually in the minority in this. I think this is going to come down to a Georgia-Auburn battle because of his relationship with Travis Williams, even though I know that Clemson's in this, and he released the top three at one point with Clemson and Nebraska, and that there have been some other schools in the mix. I mean, I think that he is clearly Georgia's to lose, and I think that that's where he lands. But I think that this does become a Georgia-Auburn battle down the stretch.
The reason why I play that audio, though, is because Ben Wolks said that here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza a couple of weeks ago. But there's been some evolution in Ben's opinion since then. He's now gone online with an official prediction that Owen Popoe is actually going to choose Auburn over Georgia. And then Ben wrote this week at SEC Country about why he would flip his prediction from Georgia to Auburn for Popoe. He says, to give you some insight on my decision to change my pick from Georgia to Auburn, this is actually something I considered doing about 2 weeks ago. It's been trending this way for more than a month, even though the last public comment Popoe made about his recruitment was stating Georgia's his number one, Auburn is his number two. Kevin Steele and Travis Williams, that's the linebackers coach there, have made some serious ground here, surpassed the Bulldogs. Ben Wolk writes, this isn't the end of the battle, but now I expect Auburn to be the choice for Owen Popoe. This is a huge deal for Georgia fans because obviously May 5th is a date they've had circled for quite some time for one of the biggest additions Dog fans were hoping for that 2019 class. So what does this really mean for Georgia and five-star linebacker Owen Popoe? Let's find out right now here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza as we do our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all and bring on our buddy Jeff Sintel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Time for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. We do it every Tuesday here on our Dog Nation Daily. And let me say hello to our buddy Jeff Sintel, who does a great job, as always, covering UGA recruiting for DogNation.com. And, Jeff, I'm going to expense with the pleasantries. No hellos, no good mornings, none of that today. I want to dive right into the topic at hand. We're just reading a quote from our colleague Benjamin Wolk, who covers Auburn recruiting for SEC Country. He's gone on a record saying he now thinks Owen Popoe chooses Auburn over Georgia. He is not the only one in the sort of college football recruiting internet community who has sort of felt that way. Is Popoe trending away from UGA at the moment?
Good morning, Brandon. Wham, bam, thank you, sir. I'm surprised you didn't say propose intel because you had that mind meld on your mind so much.
Sure.
And also wondering why we're not talking about Ashton Hagans committing to Kentucky. LOLOL. I digress. Popoe, Brandon, I'm going to give you the bad news, and I'm going to give you the good news about Owen Popoe. The bad news is there are still 25 days until he makes his public decision. The good news is there are still 25 days until he makes his public decision. It seems to me over the last couple of, at least the last 10 days, there's been some kind of insidery feel going around about momentum to Popoe, momentum for Popoe to Auburn. And I'm sure there are linking factors here. There's linking factors with the time he spent at Auburn recently with his teammate Wanya Morris. Wanya Morris has Auburn and Tennessee in his top two. I think with Popoe, no matter what the decision comes down on for May the 5th, I think it probably still needs to be seen as a long play equation for Owen Popoe. Everybody remembers where Brenton Cox was in April of 2017. Everybody remembers where Adam Anderson was in 2017. And Owen Popoe is a guy. He is a tremendous player. I've been watching him since his freshman year, since his middle school year, coming out of middle school at Grayson, working out at Georgia's practice fields and quickly earning an offer. There is a long way to go in whatever eventual decision is going to happen for Owen Popoe. And I can even classify the long way as 25 days. There is a lot that can likely happen in 25 days, much like there's a lot that has happened over the last 3 weeks between Owen Popoe and Auburn.
It is funny that you bring up the name Adam Anderson because, rightly or wrongly, that's what this scenario kind of reminds me of. And maybe I'm connecting facts that aren't, you know, quite connected, but it seems like Popoe takes a lot of visits with other Grayson teammates. I'm thinking about he and Wanya Morris being together at Knoxville not too long ago. I want to say, if I'm not mistaken, he and Ronald Tompkins, the running back there at Grayson, were at LSU together recently. There was a quote from the, and I apologize for not remembering his name, the three-star center at Grayson, who apparently recently went back to Auburn with Popoe here. It seems like there's a lot of visiting with Grayson teammates, and it does kind of remind me me a little bit of the situation with Adam Anderson, who obviously ends up a part of Georgia's 2018 class, but at one point in time dropped a UGA commitment to join the LSU class along with Jaquan Griffin and Jamarcus Chapman. None of those three guys, for what it's worth, end up in the LSU class, but they all at one point in time sort of, you know, committed together there. I mean, am I reading too much into this, that there's a lot of tie-ins with current Grayson teammates and the SEC schools that are showing some interest in them?
Yeah, but I think Grayson is just a complicated Texas-type picture there. I mean, Grayson, they're going to end up with this fantastic 2019 class, and they're going to end up going in a lot of different directions. That's just what I think there. And then I guess the main thing to in this short attention span, knee-jerk reaction theater, is there's a lot of things that have happened for Owen. You remember Owen was initially going to commit to Florida State. He was initially then trending to Clemson. And then he had a final three, I think he established last November, that included Clemson and Nebraska and Georgia. And now Clemson and Nebraska are no longer in the stratosphere, the ozone layer of Owen Popoe's decision. The one constant there for everything has been Georgia. And I don't think Georgia has done anything to lose steam or lose gas. I just think this is a question where Auburn is really coming on strong. And Owen's going to have a pretty busy April. He's going to attend the Nike opening combine this month. He's got a school prom. He just took an official visit to LSU, and he's planning another official visit to Penn State coming up. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on with Owen Popoe and his decision. And this is, Brandon, as it should be expected with a five-star linebacker that everybody in the country has wanted since his ninth grade season.
Without a doubt. And to me, the most sort of negative thing for George in this regard is, I mean, Owen was a guy that's obviously visiting the Dogs a bunch back in the fall, but to find out that he's not going to be at G-Day because he's taking an official visit to Penn State. I don't think he's going to Penn State. I don't think anybody else probably would either. But the fact that he's not in Athens for G-Day, you know, that close to a decision on May 5th, I mean, that does cause an alarm to go off for me. And I'm not telling you that's, you know, predictive of anything, but it's not a great sign. And I think you would agree with me on that's not what you'd prefer to be true if you're hoping that Popoe ends up in with a Georgia LOI come, you know, December or February. The fact that he's, you know, a few days before he's supposed to make his commitment decision public, he's going to be in State College instead of Athens.
Well, Brandon, I guess here's the part where I kind of envision myself as you're on the therapist couch and I'm sitting there kind of like, I guess I'm going to give you the soprano role from The Sopranos. You're Tony.
Sure.
I'm the therapist in glasses, and I'm sitting here with a sketch pad and trying to figure things out. So let me take a couple of those piece by piece. Number one, Owen Popoe was not at Auburn's spring game either.
Nobody else was either, for what it's worth.
I think the reported numbers were 28,000.
Yeah,
which sounds like Enron was in the press box. Those accountants found some work, yeah. And they are now estimating crowd sizes at Jordan-Hare Stadium. And I think with all these things is that, you know, Owen is a guy that's just a splendid player, and I don't think he needs to see any more from Georgia. And then the other thing with Owen in Georgia is he can make that trip any day of the week. He's been there so much. If you look with Owen's thought processes, is he's trying to take visits on days where he kind of be in a more personal one-on-one and an intimate setting. And it's kind of been that way with him in Georgia for quite some time. How he's taken a lot of personal, very secluded visits where he's not having to share time with a lot of coaches. And I will also, you know, Brandon, this will kind of get your thought bubbles popping up again. This is not, and this is a reality point. I don't want anybody to think, oh, Jeff is saying this because this is going to happen. Here's some reality. Georgia losing a player of Owen Popoe's caliber is no longer the same as it used to be with all your worries out of Gwinnett County.
Yeah.
The worst-case scenario is Owen Popoe goes and plays for Auburn. He's about 6'1". He's about 215 pounds. All the immediate Roquan comparisons could probably – I'm not saying they won't happen, but they would only materialize when he puts on about 25 more pounds. Now, he is fast, he is smart, he is intelligent, and he is instinctive. He is all of those things. But Georgia has ensured that they will have a playmaker in that position. I know Owen is the new five-star recruit of the month, a recruit of the cycle, where it shows a measure of just how strong Georgia's recruiting muscle is when they let a guy like this, they retain a guy like this, don't let him drift to another SEC rival and get all of those things. But Georgia has guys like Channing Kendall, Monty Rice, Quay Walker, lots of linebacker talent. Tresman Marshall is still definitely on the board for the class of 2019, and maybe he's a more of a truer fit for Georgia's prototype, what they want for their inside linebackers, those big Alabama-type guys. So all those things said, Owen Popoe, it's 25 days until he makes his public decision, and I think there'll be at least 20 more Fred G. Sanford-type heart attacks than Brandon. Based on every thread and every headline he sees regarding this young man's decision.
There is no doubt about that. It's our Marlowe's Tavern Tell-All here every Tuesday on Dog Nation Daily. And with our Marlowe's Tavern Tell-All, it's a chance for us to tell you about all the great things that going on at Marlowe's and why it does truly live up to the billing as chef-inspired food, including the blue cheese dressing, which a lot of people describe as sort of a blue cheese with dimension. Marlowe's uses a gorgonzola that's creamier and it's milder. And a lot of people don't like the blue cheese dressing other places, but you're going to give the Marlowe's blue cheese dressing a try and find out, you know what? It's like no other blue cheese dressing you've ever had. It's fantastic food. I was at Marlowe's again the other day. I was at the Dunwoody location and enjoying a little happy hour with some friends and some colleagues. And, boy, it does not disappoint. They've got a brand-new spring menu coming up here, too, in a couple weeks that we'll look forward to telling you about. But those shrimp and crab nachos, Jeff, as you know, I was able to have those a little bit the other day. And, once again, they were right there on point, as the kids like to say.
On point. They were on fleek, and they were legit, right, Brandon?
Yeah, I guess that's also probably true as well. All right, let me talk for a moment about a guy that is coming to G-Day, or at least scheduled to be there, and that's Derek Rambo Hunter. I love his nickname. I love his game. I don't love the fact that he keeps going to Gainesville, Florida, though. I guess he was there again this past weekend. That's like, what, three visits and really just a couple months' time for Hunter there to Florida. I think in some respects put some pressure on Georgia to impress here on April 21st, given the fact that Hunter here, despite, I mean, in addition to everything he said publicly, he just shows up at Gainesville a lot, it seems, these days.
Well, Gainesville's a lot closer than Athens for Fort Myers, than Fort Myers to get up there. And I just remember, you know, Derek Hunter is a guy, there might be something there with Derek Hunter where he may accelerate a timeline. He is kind of teased that there is some news going to be coming out this month regarding his decision. And that's kind of, and I don't know if it will be a new declaration of a school or a commitment for everything with Hunter, because he's always long time maintained that he was going to make his decision at an All-American game. The one thing to watch for there is I don't know if Derek Hunter has yet assimilated himself or attached himself to an All-American game, one of those national All-American games as of yet. So that might be a case where if he doesn't have a marquee invitation to one of those All-American showcases, then maybe he might have to rethink what he's going to do there in terms of when he had previously thought he was going to make his college decision. Derek Hunter is a guy that I think 6'6", 281, still, you know, you guys want to go to his Twitter page. There is a still committed to ATD and a dog insignia emoji at the top of his Twitter page. And I remember the conversation I had with him. I said, Mr. Rambo, Mr. Hunter, sir, we do see a dog emoji at the top of your Twitter page. He said, yep. And I said, I do see ATD at the top of your Twitter page. And he said, yep. And ATD is Georgia's recruiting motto and team motto, attack today. And he said, yep. I said, are all these things coincidental? And he said, nope. So that's a kind of short, lightning fast way to kind of look at the way things are with Rambo Hunter. And I wish sometimes, and I love all our readers and I love all our audience that are already chiming in, Popoe and the weather reports on Rambo Hunter. Sometimes recruiting reporter feels like a weather reporter, which way the winds are blowing. And I'm going to throw this out here on the site, and somebody else is probably going to make a kajillion dollars off of it. But if there was a way where we could simply put up on the recruiting homepage maybe five dials per day, and it would look like a temperature gauge where it would look like hot, cold. Yesterday's proposed temperature to Georgia was 117 degrees. Today, the proposed temperature is only 101 with a cold front coming in from Auburn over the last 12 hours.
I like it.
I think you put one of those up for Rambo. You put one of those up for Owen Popoe, maybe Trevon Walker, maybe Andrew Booth. And you can go there at the start of your day, Brandon, and see all those dials, which one's hot, which one's cold, and which one is frozen over, like maybe the case with Luke Griffin. I think the world would be a better place for some of you great Dog Nation people out there.
I like Brian Breese, the superstar 2020 prospect who's going to be at G-Day, I believe. He's also at that, was it the Nike Open qualifier up in New Jersey? And is it Antonio Alfonso? Is that the 2019 defensive end that was also kind of showing out there? A couple guys that have some interest in Georgia, and Georgia's got some interest in them. Up there in the Northeast, they were doing some pretty big things, right?
Yeah, Alfonso is the guy. You want to get a visit watch on Fleek, Brandon? You want to get one of those little ears up visit watch? You know, Antonio Alfonso really told reporters there, our land of tens, Tyler Donahue, that he's kind of a fun recruit to talk to because, number one, 6'4", 275, and he ran a short shuttle, Brandon, that was faster than the one Noah Cain, the five-star running back, put up during his Nike opening testing, which is a eye-opening feat. To say the least. He had a 124, I believe, spark rating, Nike rating, which is kind of in that, alarm going off, Nolan Smith, explosive, twitchy athlete type range. But Alfonso said a couple of things. He likes Penn State. He is planning to take his second unofficial visit, to Georgia and Alabama this month, and that will be the second one to each of those schools. And he's working to build that family feel, that family type bond. And he said right now he's not ready to name his official visits, but he kind of kidded with reporters and he could say, well, if you're paying attention and you're looking at the schools that I'm visiting now on my own, mm-hmm. he felt that that was a pretty good window in the schools he will eventually take his official visits to. We're talking about the nation's number five defensive end, could also be a defensive tackle type body for Georgia as well. And he said, you know, that's a pretty good hint about which schools will get his officials. And he named three schools where he has very close relationships with the coaching staff. That's Penn State, who should probably be seen as kind of, if we had to talk about those dials we just talked about in that last description during our last thought bubble there, Brandon, the dial on Penn State would probably maybe read the hottest. But he also lumped in Georgia and Alabama as two other coaching staffs that he feels that he really gets them. And they really dig in as well.
Yeah, James Franklin's a good recruiter. There's no doubt about that. Let me do a couple of quick subjects here before we get ready to let you go. Kirby Smart talked this week, and we're actually going to hear some of this audio on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marcus Peets in a couple minutes. But he talked this week about something you and I have actually dealt with on our program before, which is the tendency to be a little guard heavy along the offensive line, that true tackles are hard to find. Right now it seems like Kirby thinks he's got a bit of an imbalance in the guard position. You know, looking for some more tackles, seemed like everybody's kind of always doing that. And, you know, you kind of touched on this in the Centel Intel piece this week there at DogNation.com, that with Luke Griffin no longer in this class, all of a sudden now you're sort of rebooting. You know, okay, so who are the true tackles that Georgia's going to have to go after? And, Jeff, this is a pretty crucial question, given the fact that, from Kirby's own words here, there are more guards than tackles at the moment.
Yeah, Brandon, that's something you and I have been talking about for a while. I think when you're talking about a true, legit SEC premier left tackle, I don't know if Georgia has a lot of those, even as well as they have recruited in the past few years. I think Andrew Thomas is definitely that guy. They're trying to figure out if Kendall Baker might be a guy. Cade Mays is more of a right tackle. Isaiah Wilson is more of a right tackle. Is DeMarcus Hayes, the junior college guy, going to flash on in his second year in the program after a redshirt 2017 season? Those are things to think for. And, you know, there's some names out there. There's a guy by the name of Xavier Truss out of the Northeast. He was also at that combine. He's also planning to visit Georgia in the near future. He's another 6'8", 350-pound guy that really kind of just checks a lot of the boxes in terms of size and length. Kind of sounds like I'm going to laugh as I say this, kind of a not a super-sized Daniel Falele, but definitely a large size or junior size Daniel Falele. So he's huge. There's another name, Xavier Truss. That's the one, Warren McClendon is a name that comes up that everybody needs to think about as well in terms of, you know, what's going on there. He's a Georgia legacy. His uncle and his cousins both played there. Sam Pittman has been recruiting him, man, since the days that Luke Griffin committed to Georgia, which seems like an eternity ago. back in June of 2016. And there's the offensive tackle spot, I think, is kind of going to be one of the key spots. Everybody brings up the young man out of West Virginia, Darnell Wright, the nation's number three offensive tackle. He's a guy that's name is closely linked with Georgia as well. Georgia's got to get another one of those big body type offensive tackles. And to be fair to the rest of the country and what Georgia's doing, there are not a lot of true left tackles in the world anywhere, because there might have not even been a true left tackle in the entire recruiting class last year when you look at the class of 2018. So offensive tackle is a huge priority, and I think Georgia might take maybe two tackles, maybe three to four linemen total. So they're going to get a little bit skinnier with their offensive line signees in 2019.
Well, let me finish up with this here in our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. He is not an offensive tackle, but he is a very good offensive lineman, and Harry Miller is also a terrific young man as well. You kind of teased this for us on Friday when you were on the program, that you had a great piece dropping about him at DogNation.com. Jeff, I had a chance to read it. It did not disappoint. The work that young man's doing in Nicaragua and really the selfless acts that he's a part of, you know, this is a pretty impressive football player out of Buford there, but he's also a very impressive young man, too. I just wanted to say, kind of as we get ready to go out the door here, really just a really good piece, and I appreciate you highlighting the work that he's doing away from football.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I'm kind of called to do, Brandon. I'm going to write about players that are trending to Georgia and likely to go to Georgia, but there are going to be a few times where I'm just going to write about kids that are a terrific story. Everybody wonders about objectivity with writers, and I do write for a site called DogNation.com. The one thing I'm going to be totally transparent about is I'm always going to root for, and I'm always going to platform a tremendous story, especially a tremendous story like the one out of Harry Miller, who I think is, if you had to get inside Kirby Smart's head and you could draw up the ideal football recruit in all phases, it would be a Harry Miller, because he's versatile, competitive, he's a battler. 34 on the ACT, going to be the school valedictorian. True leadership material, also values selflessness, also values service. That is a guy, Harry Miller. It seems cliche to say that Harry Miller checks every box to me, Brandon. I think there's a Harry Miller box, and I don't know if there are many young men that I've ever covered that fully check that box the way Harry Miller does. Just a remarkable young man in all phases of the game. It's about more than football. It's about using his silly ability to play a game. He wants to build wastewater treatment plants, camps, parks, everything else through a faith-based mission in Nicaragua, and he invests in that totally. And just a young person that I hope other young people, when they're coming up and they're figuring out how to handle this recruiting fame and this instant fame and all these Twitter followers, Harry Miller would be a good example to follow about everything looking forward there.
Yeah, it's a great story. We appreciate you telling us all about it, pun intended, as we wrap up the Marlowe's Tavern tell-all here on this Tuesday. Jeff, I know you've got a lot more coming here with the Centel Intel at DogNation.com throughout the rest of the week. Getting close to G-Day, that visitor list is growing. The twists and turns, or as you kind of say, the weather report on the five-star linebacker Owen Popo. There's a lot of places for that to go between now and May 5th. Jeff, we'll look forward to more of your coverage of it and talk to you again here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, very soon.
All right, Brandon. And I think my psychiatric rates on the Popo front are going to go up to $125 an hour.
Yeah, I think you may be right about that. Money well spent on my end, I guess.
Thank you, sir. Take it easy, man.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Great stuff from Jeff Sintel, and I am just going to go ahead and warn you, and some of you are going to roll your eyes when you hear this. You know, if you go to like the forum at forum.dognation.com, there's that thread that kind of keeps getting regenerated about what's wrong with UGA recruiting going back to spring and the summer, where, I mean, we did spend a lot of time here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza kind of, you know, lamenting, you know, the recruiting losses. As Jeff said, Brent Cox chose Ohio State for a while. You know, Georgia was not really in the mix, seemingly, with a lot of those four- and five-star names around this time a year ago. June 27th with Zamir White's kind of changed that, and everything sort of picked up after that. But there was a time when, you know, Georgia kind of swung and missed a couple times. It was the era of what's wrong with UGA recruiting in the brief tenure of Kirby Smart as UGA head coach. You know, you heard about an accelerated timeline there for Derek Hunter, were he to choose Florida in that accelerated timeline, were Owen Popo to choose Auburn here on May 5th. I mean, some of that stuff is going to get rebooted a little bit. And I don't, you know, mean to, you know, sort of fan the flames of hysteria. I guess I'm going to try to avoid that. But, I mean, Yeah, and you can make a case that, you know, out-of-state prospect like Hunter, Georgia shouldn't even be the favorite for him anyway. Owen Popoe, you know, you can say what you want about that. That's going to be a long battle all the way to the end, as both Jeff and Ben Wolk kind of pointed out. But, you know, if Georgia gets bad news on a couple fronts here over the next month or so, there'll be some what's wrong with UGA recruiting talk pop up, even if it's not necessarily supposed to be there. By the way, speaking of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all, which we do on Tuesday, coming up on Tuesday, April 17th, which is, I guess, a week from today. Is that right? April 17th, next week, 1 week from today, we're going to be at Marlowe's that night for our big preview of the UGA spring game. We've got a huge show coming up for you. Marlowe's in Brookhaven on Tuesday, April 17th. It is going to be a lot of fun. Please make plans to be with us there for that. We'll tell you more about that. But go ahead and save that date right now, Tuesday, April 17th, our first Marlowe's broadcast in some time. It is always a blast there in Brookhaven. We're looking forward to being back to Marlowe's in Brookhaven on Tuesday evening. That's Tuesday, April 17th. We'll be previewing the end of Georgia spring practice with that big spring game there that are following Saturday. All right, SEC through time now. I mentioned to start the show that Brett McMurphy had some odds from the Las Vegas Superbook that listed Georgia among the SEC, or I should say the national championship favorites. There were some other SEC teams that do sort of pop up on that tweet here from the Las Vegas Superbook. I gave the Alabama odds earlier at 7-4. That is the national championship favorite at the moment. If you want to do the math on that, that's a little less than 2-1 for Alabama. You also see Auburn pop in here at 25-1. Maybe decent odds on an Auburn team that brings back its quarterback. It does have to play both Alabama and Georgia on the road, but 25-1, that's actually kind of a fairly interesting thing to think about when you look at the other teams that's sort of in the mix with there. LSU is at 30-1 to win the national championship. That puts them among like the 12 or 15 highest, you know, valued teams for the national championship. I think that's ludicrous. I think there's a chance that LSU finishes with a losing record. I think 30-1 on LSU to win the national championship is just absolutely bizarre. One other SEC team does get mentioned. That's Texas A&M at 60-1, who I can't really buy into this year either. But you see, you know, at least according to these Las Vegas Superbook odds, those are the five teams in the SEC that are going to get the most attention here, you know, this upcoming season. Four from the West, just Georgia from the East. Kind of funny that South Carolina does not show up here, even though that I think South Carolina is going to be a top 25 team, whereas I don't think that Texas A&M or LSU will be this season. I'm high on A&M for its future, not really for Jimbo Fisher's first year. So a couple SEC teams do kind of pop up there, and we'll kind of see how that sort of plays out the rest of the offseason with the conversation on that. Florida, who I mentioned a moment ago, they've got their spring game coming up this weekend, and Dan Mullen's making a big push here. Now, Mullen, as you know, has been going around, or you may be aware of, especially if you watch SEC Country Live, he's been going around and really touring the campus here as of late, speaking to frat houses, speaking to sororities. He ran with the Florida ROTC unit. He has played dodgeball there in the student center. He's really trying to ingratiate himself to the Florida students, and this is all in an attempt to, what he says, break the record for attendance at the Florida spring game. I guess 60 grand is the highest attendance of a Florida spring game in the past. He's looking for more than that this weekend when the Gators do their business. Now, it should be pointed out that Florida, the SEC spring games so far this offseason have not been well attended. South Carolina had no one there. Auburn had no one at its game. Now, most of these games have been affected by the weather. I don't really know what it's expecting to be in Gainesville on Saturday. But we'll see how much Florida fans are kind of buying into Dan Mullen, the transition to him as coach, with his big push here for a spring game attendance. We will kind of watch that. One more story to get to. Ole Miss, as it turns out, according to Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports, is blocking Shea Patterson's attempt to be eligible in his first year transferring there to Michigan. He's citing extenuating circumstances, being misled about the NCAA investigation at his old school Ole Miss. The Rebels are kind of pushing back on this, and I don't really care one way or another about this. I'm not a Michigan fan. I'm not an Ole Miss fan. But, man, isn't this a bad look? I mean, he's out of the SEC. He wants to move on with his life. Matt Luke, you know, talked this week about how Ole Miss now has this dark cloud over from them. They're kind of moving on. They're ranked number one in recruiting right now for the class of 2019. How about you let bygones be bygones? You wash your hands of this and let Shea Patterson play football for Michigan. I mean, I just think this is a really bad look on Ole Miss's part. It makes them seem petty and small, even smaller than the scandals of Hugh Freeze made them seem. I am all on Patterson's side on this, despite the fact that he's at Michigan now and he's sort of combating an SEC team. Count me among the supporters hoping that Patterson wins this battle with Ole Miss here and will make that your SEC through. Let me transition back here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, to discussion with the Georgia Bulldogs. And I want to look at the Georgia offensive line in particular. And, you know, one of the things that we've talked a lot about on our program here is just how big the Dogs' offensive line might be this season. If you have Isaiah Wilson starting at right tackle, he's a giant of a man. You know, the same thing could be true for Ben Cleveland, who last year was playing, you know, right guard at the end of the year. Now, he's moved around some with the tackle positions and things like that, but my assumption is he's likely to sort of stick around with right guard as his starting position. That gives you a real gigantic right side of your offensive line. Well, the left side of that offensive line could also potentially get pretty big, too, with the emergence of Solomon Kinley here, maybe at a new position. Kirby Smart did this week at spring practice kind of talk about what he's seen from Solomon Kinley so far this spring, and you know, it's kind of a nice description of a guy in Kinley who, when he had chances to play last year when he was healthy, you know, showed some flashes. Here is Kirby on Solomon Kinley.
He's taken a greater concern for his weight. He's done a much better job managing that. He continues to grow and develop as a player. I mean, we had a rhythm on offense when Ben went in that I don't know that it was because of Ben or because of Solomon not being there, but it was a good rhythm. And it was not something that we were going to change because we were playing well offensively those last three, four games. So Solomon knows it's a competitive environment. He knows that Trey Hill and Atori, we got guys coming in. I mean, it's everybody, and they sit in these seats every day, and we tell them, you put it on tape, we'll put you in. If you get beat out or you don't compete, then we'll play the other guy. And Solomon competes as tough as anybody we got, and I appreciate that.
What Kirby references there is the move that was made at the end of the season to put Ben Cleveland in that starting unit, and it's probably true. While I'm not breaking down the game film, it certainly did seem like the Georgia offense got a little extra degree of crispness with Cleveland working there at the right guard. I don't say that to disparage Solomon Kinley. It just seemed like the Georgia offense was doing pretty well, and it seems like that Kinley, like a lot of these big offensive linemen that Georgia has, Kirby Smart's, you know, continually pushing them and encouraging them not to get too big, and it sounds like Kinley's kind of working on staying slim enough to really compete at the highest level possible for him. And that competition, as we found out this weekend from Kirby Smart, might involve sliding over and doing a different position. Right guard last season as a starter for part of the year. This week at practice, working a bit at left guard. What's going on there? Kirby Smart did go into a little more detail.
The move there that everybody's trying to make a big deal about, we're getting another tackle ready. So we're taking Kendall Baker and allowing him to work at a secondary position, no different than a corner might have to play safety or a safety might have to play star, you know, or a tackle might have to play guard. I mean, Kendall Baker, we're trying to see, is he our best left tackle? Is he our second best left tackle? Is he our best right tackle? Is he our second best right tackle? And most teams in America are guard heavy. So where we want to do is we want to make sure we've got those edges secure, and that's just allowed us to get Solomon and Ben more reps along with Trey Hill and Atori and those guys.
So to listen to Kirby Smart there, the move of Kinley at practice to left guard is more about Kendall Baker than it is Solomon Kinley. I don't know, you know, I guess that remains to be seen how true that really is. Maybe then they're thinking about Kendall Baker and that sort of Dyshon Sims role. Kirby seems to like to have that sixth man offensive lineman that could potentially play all five positions, or maybe in Baker's case, four of the five positions. Maybe that's what's going on there. But I can't help but think, and listen, as Kirby Smart alluded to, there's a lot more than just Solomon Kinley competing for playing time in those guard positions. Jamari Salyer will be here in the summer. Trey Hill's earning reviews right now that are certainly positive. You heard Kirby drop the name of Torrey Johnson, which was a guy from the 2017 class we were all excited about. But it's hard to ignore the fact that if Georgia's got Andrew Thomas at left tackle, Solomon Kinley at left guard, Ben Cleveland at right guard, Isaiah Wilson at right tackle, the metamorphosis of the offensive line that Chip Towers described on Monday, that truly would be complete. This would be a giant offensive line and something to see for the Dogs in the fall. All right, let's wrap up here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Thanks for being a part of the program. Before we say goodbye to you, though, couple things here. First of all, we do our Gatorator countdown here on Dog Nation Daily every single day, and of course, we believe that good Georgia fans are supposed to be Gator haters. Our buddy Eddie the Blind Squirrel, which you watch us on video, you see him every day, he believes that too, and we are now in an even 200 days between now and October in the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, the rematch between Georgia and Florida, the first time for Dan Mullen in the game, a game we think the Dogs are going to win again. It's our Gator Hater Countdown here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Let me also extend a little bit of good luck tonight to the Diamond Dogs playing in Clemson. I believe this is a neutral site game, I think. I think it's in North Augusta is where this game, like a minor league park. But Diamond Dogs, after dropping the series 2 of 3 to Vanderbilt, getting back non-conference tonight against Clemson, traditional power here. Good luck to the Diamond Dogs there. We'll see you tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza.